about the sponsor real quick and then we'll get into it.
Yeah, so our sponsor for this week, as always, is Rollbit. Go on there, the most well-known crypto casino at this stage for all your casino, sports betting, futures trading needs. We're going to be doing some Jewel Arena stuff later in the day, so make sure you go into the Jewel Arena. We'll give you all the details about that in a little bit. But yeah, they're our sponsor for today. I think I've got the codes. Just give me 1 second. The first code for today is go to moon 1511. Go to moon 1511. I think claimers are going to get free side bets this week, which is slightly different than what we've had before. All right.
Perfect. So, there we go. What are we looking at today? What are we looking at this week, Mando?
Well, I thought in terms of the big trends going on right now, I was like, Ordinals, Solana feel like the two ones for the next 12 months. We had Raoul Paul on the show a couple months back, who told us all to buy Solana when it was trading at 30. It's kind of doubled since then. And now it feels like that's just where a lot of the degenerate shit is going on. Like, if I take a step back, all the airdrop stuff it seems to be happening on Solana. I saw people getting absolutely wrecked yesterday on some MSOL stuff. And I just thought Easy is known as being like the fucking pillar of the Solana community throughout the bear, all the way down to whatever it was, $7. And he just seemed like the right guy to get on the show to kind of teach us about Solana again, teach us about the things that we could get involved in, as well as just like hearing his story. But yeah, that's the stuff I've been focused on. Over the last week, we were in Miami. Obviously, we hung out a lot. Easy, you're from Miami, right? You live there. You live,
yeah,
in Breed,
live down here.
11. KBM is also in Miami, so you guys should meet up more often.
Why do the builders hate Solana though? I mean, like, people just talk about it as impossible to build on, can't code on it.
I think it's largely because it's just paper. Yeah, good question. I think it's just because it's different. Like, it's Rust versus Solidity, so it's not as streamlined. They did just release Solang, which is a way to run Solidity on Solana. So there is some things that have been coming on. It's just a different blockchain, and many people hate change. So I think that's the big thing. It's like, coming from a development background myself, it's like if you tried to make JavaScript work with like basically Ruby on Rails or something like that, where it's just not as seamless. There's some overlap, but I think people view like the argument of you can't build stuff is always crazy, just because like we've seen a lot of the same trends that happen on ETH have already played out on Solana. Like NFTFi right now is really big. Lending, loaning, borrowing, all that other stuff on the ETH side of things. We've gone through that cycle like 3 times, you know? And we've seen multiple platforms try to fractionalize it, much like we're seeing with Flooring Protocol on Solana. We've seen trait bidding and all these other things that Blur's like innovating on. And we've honestly just kind of ran through all of that and seen it run through its course on Sol at a much quicker pace. Like, royalties have been enforced now for almost a full calendar year, and that's still a struggle on ETH. So the argument of like, yeah, people can't build on Sol. If anything, the people who are Sol native ship much quicker. And we tend to see some of these trends already play out. And it's even what we're kind of seeing now with enforced royalties from like Yuga going to Magic Eden and that announcement happening. We saw this exact same cycle play out on Solana almost a year and a half ago.
So yeah, maybe let's go back a bit. Like, how is your Miami? Did you hear anything new happening in the space that got you super excited? I was out there. Obviously, the Rug Radio merger was quite a big deal on what we heard about. But there, I know that I wasn't really in the Solana weeds, and I know a lot of that community was out there. And now I just see just insane amounts of transactions, insane amounts of wallets. Like, everyone seems to be on this chain doing stuff at the moment. Like, what are the main things that get you excited from like a protocol level going on there right now?
I mean, pure protocol level, the way that I look at it is the quick update, which went live, which has basically stopped a lot of like the downtime things. And this is before Basel, of course. This is probably 8 months now in the making. And Breakpoint happening end of October, start of November.
Can we go into that? Because downtime is a big thing that people get scared about with Solana. Can you go into what's happened?
Yeah, so downtime largely was due to congestion of the chain, which led to it being basically inoperable. And many people saying that Solana would turn off, which I think in a sense is largely just because of demand on the chain. And at the time when that was occurring, it was almost entirely due to just increased demand and high usage. From a singular instance cluster, to just kind of break that down as basic as possible, it's like if you're using your computer, with multiple applications open, and it starts to heat up, and eventually it can reach a point where it overheats. Very similar type of approach. They've rolled out something called Quick, which was an update to help deflect some of that. Priority fees came into play, which are very still minuscule, and that has since resolved those same issues. And now what's happening, just got pushed on testnet, was FireDancer, which is an entirely second client, which will allow for dual client support. So the downtime argument of like Sol goes down all the time, this upcoming February in 2024 will be 20 or a full calendar year, 12 straight months of no downtime, no issues, no offline situation. Before that, there was multiple instances where it did occur. So there's still like this taboo of it shuts down all the time. It's unusable. They'll turn it off. It was never a matter of like the changes being quote turned off. It was that it was like unusable because of demand on the chain and just number of interactions. Blocks ultimately had issues and then they'd have to revert, which is crazy because Sol got all this hate for it. But you look at things like Optimism, Arbitrum, Polygon, and a lot of these L2s, which have openly shut off the chain.
Yeah, right? They go down a lot too. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a fair argument. I don't think it's like that's kind of a whataboutism. Like, I still think that if you're going to trust a blockchain, you don't want it ever to go down. Like, if we're going to be like supporting huge things. But I do get what you're saying. So, do you think it will ever go down again with these changes? I think I saw you say like you don't think it's ever going to go down again now.
I don't, especially with FireDancer, because you'll need two full instances of Solana to shut down, like two complete instances of it to shut off. And it's like a dual client model, which is the big thing. And that's kind of the things that I look at is I'm like, okay, if this is going on and this is happening, then in order for this to completely fail like it has in the past, ultimately what you need is for both clients to shut down. And if that happens, there's a much bigger issue at hand because now you actually have a failover that can come into play. So it's way more along the lines of like traditional uptime and hosting, like an AWS server, which many people still will also throw FUD at saying it's centralized, etc. But it's why AWS has an east and a west cluster to basically ensure that there's no complete downtime for traditional web applications.
Okay. And you said just now that obviously Breakpoint was the next big moment and FireDance was really the main story that came out of that. Maybe we'll get into that a little bit later. But was there anything smaller that was mentioned there that you think people didn't really pick up on?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a couple things to be honest here. FireDancer was obviously the big one, but I think the other thing from that was just a lot of the partnership stuff and announcements and key things that just like at Breakpoint, a lot of it was about the tech stack. A lot of it was about the ecosystem. A lot of it was projects and products that were on stage talking about what it is they're shipping. So like the developer side of things was really interesting because it shows that so many people are still trying new things. We're even starting to see RWAs and real world assets on Solana, which is really interesting to me from watches and much like what Arcade.xyz has been doing with collateralized loans for real world assets. We're seeing very similar as well. So that's kind of the thing for me that I'm watching and keeping an eye on of where it goes from here, because people are trying new things and really pushing to see just how far they can develop stuff on Sol. And I think with Breakpoint, that conference is very much conference focused. It's not as much side event focused, which we've seen with like NFT Now. Basel's a perfect example, all side events. And a lot more of like the people who are there to grow the ecosystem are all in one spot. So a lot of the conversations are about like, all right, how do we solve issues? How do we try new things? How do we get new people excited? The gaming sector on Sol hasn't taken off by any means. And that's one area that I think there was a strong showing at Breakpoint. Aurori was there, Star Atlas, some of these other big players that have done a really good job. Like at one point, before this recent DeFi run, you had Star Atlas doing 60% of transactions for Solana just with their game, which is like an absurd number. And that just shows that there is certainly a level of demand. And then on top of that, now with the DeFi boom post Jito, obviously Jupiter coming up, you're starting to see these similar trends to much like ETH DeFi summer in 2020.
Yeah, are those games going to make it? Like I remember Star Atlas from a few years ago and the Aurori, but like they kind of faded and now they've come back with a gaming boom. Are any of the games you think going to be, I mean, Star Atlas still hasn't been released at all, right? I think I saw some like beta people flying around in starships, but that was about it.
Yeah, basically. So it'll be tough to see if you say like, are they going to make it? It's up for debate, you know, like that's kind of how I'm looking at it. I'm like, I want them to for sure. Will they? Yeah, that's okay. Up in the air.
I mean, so the chain was Steppen. I don't know if you guys
got Steppen cooked.
We're all there. They're still going, you know.
Still cooking.
Is it? I mean, like, we were cooking a lot of money walking around the neighborhood, me and the wife. I mean, I invested more than I made. So definitely took a big L. But I mean, like, that was a good game on Sol. I'll give you that.
Well, yeah. It's coming back, too. Like, GMT's been pumping. GST, their other token's been running recently, just as like the altcoin meta is kind of heating up on Solana. So to me, it's like, dude, Stepin had 700,000 daily active users, largely in South Korea at its peak, which is crazy. And like, to me, that's like a true proof of use case for like a consumer application where people have no idea that crypto's involved.
Yeah. Look, we've touched upon it twice already, but the word in everyone's lips when they talk about being bullish on Solana is Fire Dancer, which is this validator built by Jump. If you were to explain this to a friend who wasn't in crypto, why is this such a big deal? To me, it sounds like, yeah, high TPS, but do you really want to have a validator run by Jump Crypto? Like, I don't, there's some definitely positive negatives to it. So like, maybe you could break down, yeah, why you think this is so revolutionary, and also maybe where you think the challenges are going
to
be.
Yeah. So if I had to explain it to someone who's like never been into crypto before, the easiest way I'd explain it is, say you're working on something, say you're editing a video, working on a document, doing something for work that you've been working on for 2 months straight. All of a sudden that computer crashes. This will allow that to just be instantaneous to pick up right where it left off. So as if you could not lose that, data still persists, you're good to go. Like there's no issue, you don't lose any information, even if the computer literally implodes in front of you, that's a big deal. Like to someone who's like working tirelessly and can't risk losing something, this will sustain that and persist it, which to me is a big, big deal. The million TPS, it can handle up to 1 million transactions, doesn't need to.
Is it probably just a not. Meme? Yeah, this is what I don't get. Like people keep on saying 1 million TPS.
That's the cap. Like that's the cap. But like you have to obviously have throughput of 1 million transactions occurring to hit that, you know? And like we haven't ever been near that. I think like 40,000, 50,000 per second has been kind of the high side that we've seen even on its current cluster. So I do think it's a meme, of course, very centralized being backed by Jump Crypto. But at this point, the decentralization argument, like I just think that's hilarious to me solely because it's like, FTX was the big push for Sol for so long. Everyone was like, it's the FTX coin, it's the SBF coin. And to me, I'm like, you can't get more centralized than that. So even if we have some level of centralization, if it's going to ensure uptime and provide a better user experience, I'm for it. I'm not a huge decentralization maxi, as crazy as it may sound. Like to me, I just think that like consumer, exactly. I think consumer applications, like the general consumer doesn't care about decentralization.
Yeah, look, I agree with you. Speed trumps everything. What kind of surprised me, can they not do this with any other chain? Is this just going to be something that they are just, you know, for hire? They're going to build out the Fire Dancer of, I don't know, Celestia or one of these other monolithic chains?
Theoretically, they could, right? But I think the benefit is like Sol has this ravenous community that's so adamant about it. And it's tough to find other ecosystems that have such a diehard group of individuals that'll literally just die for a blockchain. Like it's absurd. And that was why like I had my massive conviction when Sol was like $8.60 all the way up to like $12. And even then from 12 to 8. And I was just like, this is a no-brainer. Like to me, this is an absolute no-brainer.
But are there people that would die for the blockchain when we got people switching from Sol to ETH? You got the gods, you got our sponsor Rollbit taking ROB from Sol to ETH. There's no ETH to Sol spin. It seems like people left the blockchain, actually.
Some certainly have, and they left at the lowest point. But the people that stayed, myself included, like, dude, I packed my bag sub $15, so I'm living well. I have no complaints at all. You know what I mean? Like, I wake up every morning, check the ledger, and it's a great day every single day.
It is funny that it has that narrative now, where it used to be a VC coin, and now it has this narrative of just, like, the people that stayed. Like, all the VCs basically are out. I do think there's something quite nice about that. Like, there's always going to be a new fast blockchain. Like there just always is, but they're always going to be backed by some VC. And now I feel like Solana's gone through that moment of it just everyone getting destroyed. I don't really know who the massive holders of Solana are, but I can imagine after the FTX treasury now have sold, it's got to be a pretty even distribution now compared to
widely dispersed for sure. Jump obviously has a pretty substantial bag because they're going to be operating this validator, which plays into a big part of it. The foundation is in there too because they give out grants in it as well. But it's not like they're dumping. It's like their Solana bags are for ecosystem development and validating clients, which is way more interesting than like SBF tweeting that he'll buy all your Sol at $3 and you can F off, you know?
Yeah. So I think I saw a tweet from you a while back, maybe when Solana was hitting a new high and maybe you were euphoric, but you were like, it's always been Sol. It's going to be Sol. Like Do you think this flips ETH? Do you think, and maybe we can get into why you think that, because I know there's like quite a lot of questions about monolithic versus these more roll-up centric models. Like, why do you think Solana is the one that's going to be the one?
Yeah, and I think that's like, to me, it's, I just look at it from like a general consumer perspective. Like, that's the thing, is like a true consumer perspective of, when I look at this, there's applications that have succeeded already on Sol. So for me, I'm like, this makes sense. We've already seen use cases where this makes sense and situations where I think it'll continue to make sense because they're mobile first, mobile friendly. The Phantom wallet on mobile is great. On top of that, of course, the Solana phone, a lot of people FUD it, but it's like they launched the D app store that's live today on Android.
Is that going to work though? That phone?
I don't think it needs to work is the big thing. Okay. I think it's more the messaging of it is like, we're trying things and pushing stuff and it's easy to use. Like, that's the best part. I think the Visa announcement of them using Solana to settle payment layers is fascinating to me because of, and like VanEck specifically said, it's because of the ability to transact at an insanely high throughput for a fraction of the cost. And they were estimating revenue generating opportunities by saving on credit card fees. So I'm like,
I think that's a very good point. Like, I think if I'm a payment processor and I know, because every transaction on Solana costs what, 0.01 pennies,
1/100th of a penny.
Yeah, 1/100th of a penny. So if I'm a payment processor, I know what my costs are. I think that's quite a big thing for payment processors to be able to come onto a chain and know what their costs are, whereas you can't really do that on L2s and ETH. So I do think that there's some comfort in that for people who want to move like big payment systems onto Solana. I think that is a very good selling point.
And that use case just makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, when I think about stuff, it's like when you try to wire money from a bank and it gets held up, like that is the worst possible situation. You know what I mean? Like, I look at that and I'm like, this is terrible. How does this make any sense? Like, I can't even send my own money. And the benefit of Sol is like, it's instant and a fraction of the cost. So you can handle that in such a seamless manner.
Yeah. Right. So we think that payments is going to be very strong. Obviously, it's a very consumer-centric chain. I do think that people are going to continue to question centralization. I think centralization is not a problem until it is. You know what I mean? Like, then something happens and everyone gets like, oh, fuck, this is actually a really big deal. But hopefully with time. I mean, I did read the other day that Solana beats ETH even like on the Satoshi coefficient.
More decentralized.
Yeah, but clearly on things like the validator, it's very, very centralized, you know, there's different ways of measuring this. So I think people are gonna you know, there's very various ways to mention decentralization. Maybe let's go into the more degenerate side of stuff now a little bit. So, right, so you're sold on Sol. Obviously, everyone heard of the airdrops that have happened over the last couple of weeks. You had the Pith airdrop, and then you had Jito, which is kind of the one that got everyone talking because people with $5 to their name walked away with like 10 grand. And now you're now just seeing like this big meta overtake the space, which is just like, I need to be involved in airdrops. And this is why you're seeing things like chains, which nobody uses. So Injective, Celestia, like there are literally 0 to 1,000 users of these chains right now are seeing mad pumps because people want to get involved in airdrops there. And now you're seeing it with Solana for the same reason. People wanting to get involved in the airdrops. Where should people be focused? I think I saw like a real estate protocol announced another airdrop coming up today or yesterday. What are the main things people will be looking at? And then maybe we'll get into how people got wrecked yesterday, which is, I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, so I think the big things for it is you look at like Jito. If you staked one Sol, you got the equivalent of about $20,000 airdrop to you, as long as you staked it for about 3 months, which was crazy. Jupiter is entirely volume based, much like a Uniswap, and some key things like that. But now people are looking at Marinade and MarginFi, which are lending and collateral platforms that are giving the same level of opportunity. For me, it's like I look at it and I'm like, these starting to seem like crowded trades, and I've participated in a lot of them already. So I feel like my exposure is perfectly fine. My bigger thing is like, where can I start to find things people are sleeping on? Which is where I found like a real estate leverage platform on Sol called Parcel, which announced their point system. Yeah, and that sent the NFTs from 2 to 10. So like I had luckily been watching it and I was like, no one's talking about this. I'm going to pick up a ton of the NFTs at 2. And I'm like, if these go to 10, that's a great exit, like a clean 5X in this market's beautiful. And it did exactly that. So I was like, oh, that's perfect. And then I start to look at some other opportunities where people are kind of sleeping on stuff. There's one called Stream Finance, which is a way to lock up stuff and give yourself like vesting periods. And it's actually what we saw with Bonk, or people are allowing vesting on that and unlocks to happen. There's speculation of that having an airdrop and no one's talking about it. So sorry, it's like,
what is that? So you lock your assets purposefully?
So it's not just you. Other people can do it too, to basically ensure, like, it's not quite a multi-sig, but if I want to give you Solana in a dripped fashion, or Bonk or some other SPL token, a brand new token that launches, and I want to have a cliff period and a vesting period, I can put it into the smart contract to deflect it to your wallet, or give like a deferral to your wallet. And then when that period actually unlocks on a calendar or a linear scale, you have the ability to go to that site and claim it. And this is exactly what Bonk did, was they have an unlock period every month right now for the second phase of their airdrop, where they didn't have to have people sign up or do anything. They just put in the list of wallets, configured the rules for it, and then it unlocks linearly, where you have to then go and claim it.
Okay, so this is like a protocol which allows for like delayed payments over a period
exactly.
of time. And how would you even interact with that then?
So you can even set up delayed payments for yourself, which a lot of people do, where they're like, they feel like they may be paper handing a trade. So they'll put like a meme coin in it and make themselves bag hold it, which is hilarious. And there's other ways to just kind of leverage that. Even just connecting your wallet to check. And Solana, there's what's called rent, where your tokens take up a percentage of a very small fraction of SOL whenever a new token account's opened. So like when you approve a contract for an ERC token, on SOL you pay rent to basically have that token live in your wallet. And you can actually close those token accounts and get that Solana back. So even using this to do actions like that and clean up your wallets is probably the most effortless way to use the platform and just engage with it.
Okay. So you have point systems on like you said, RWA stuff, this sort of delayed payment stuff. In terms of like the main ones people are mentioning, can you go over them? Because I know you just said them at the start. I think
I'm looking at MarginFi. Drift Protocol, which is a leverage platform. Marinade Finance, which is another liquid staking platform. Parcel, which is real world assets and leverage trading on real estate, real world real estate. So you actually are watching the US markets with it. And then Stream Finance.
Okay. So those are like the main ones people should be looking at.
What I'm looking at. Camino is a big one too, which is liquidity provision. And that one, you do have a lot of people who are like trying to take part in it for sure and trying to figure out what makes sense for them. I just think that one's a little bit too crowded for me.
And is the Jupiter airdrop done?
Phase one is done. This is only 25% of airdrops. So there will be three more phases that are rolling out. So even if you miss this one, if you look at Jupiter, there's DCA options, there's swap options, there's leverage trade options. There's four or five total things you can do on Jupiter. I would say go crazy and use all five and try to get yourself set up nicely for the second phase.
Yeah. So, Maybe we can go into what happened yesterday then, because I know I saw the timeline just like erupt with people getting like wrecked on this. Mm-hmm. I think it was a MarginFi trade, right? Like where you did like a loop of borrowing on MarginFi. Maybe you'll be the best person to describe.
Yeah, it's what people have been referring to as like recursive lending. And this is a whole can of worms, man. Like this shit is crazy. Recursive lending is basically where like I can go onto a Sol Blaze, which is like a liquid staking, take out that token, which is BSOL, and then take my BSOL, so I have a liquid stake token, lend it out on MarginFi, get MSOL for that, or get USDC, buy MSOL. So now what I have is I'm airdrop farming Sol Blaze or any of these others, swapping on Marinade or MarginFi, then getting MSOL. So now I have three different airdrops and I can do all of it with say $100. But technically you're leveraged because now you're borrowing against the dollar value. And if Sol plummets, then what happened was Sol dropped yesterday 10%. And you saw it depeg. So it actually dropped much lower on the MSOL chart, causing like cascading liquidations.
Yeah, so this was wild because I know this obviously from StakeDeath and like when we saw those depegs during like 2022, was it? Like these staking products, right? Like they are not pegged. Like they are liquidity themselves. I think someone just sold 5 million of it, right? And then everyone just
just dumped it. And it just absolutely ruined the chart.
Which is not that much, like 5 million. No. It's not a crazy amount, but
so it's because of how winded up it was, because like you look at it and it was like this thing was winded to the absolute brink of people that were leveraging it and compounding significantly more than what was actually accurate value backed on it.
Yeah. And I think as that went down, Sol like got destroyed as well. Like a bunch of people were like, fuck, there's way more risk in all this airdrop farming than I thought there was. it's still wild to me what's going on in the space right now, which is like AirDrop has suddenly become like the main, this points thing has suddenly become like the main thing that everyone is talking about. Like it started obviously with Frentech and Blur and all that sort of stuff, but now it's just like every single protocol and every single chain. And then you're seeing chains which have good tech, but literally have no uses, just promising airdrops for future protocols. Like Injective, which I like, has everyone's getting involved because they're expecting new airdrops. This whole Celestia token, which is interesting tech as like a monolithic data availability layer, like again, no users really, but just promising airdrops. And now everyone is just chasing that as like the main way to make money, which I don't know, maybe it's that point in the cycle where if you have $100, you can make six figures if you play your cards right.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think you really can. And that's the thing is like, what can you do to try to make your soul go farther? And that recursive lending is one way, but it's also extremely, extremely risky. You know what I mean? Like that's how I look at it is I'm like, you are leveraging that soul to basically 100x and your liquidation point is much lower than it should be.
Yeah, you just need a 1% dip to get liquidated, right? I think I like the airdrop game the most on Solana just because at the moment Solana TVL users, everything is at a high. Like I think you can buy into the concept that these airdrops are going to be very successful on that versus maybe chains that are just starting. But then again, like if you bought last cycle Solana, you probably crushed it that cycle. So I don't really know. I don't really know what's the stronger argument here. Like new coin, new tech is a pretty tough one to argue with as well. Like this is the issue with Solana. You can be an ETH killer and everyone says, oh, you know, but then that is a very slippery slope. Mm-hmm. Once you become a killer of the last thing, particularly the thing that everyone's buying into, then everyone's like, well, there's new tech now. And that's better.
Exactly. And that's where I look at it. I'm like, I don't think Sol's an ETH killer. I just think it's more consumer friendly. Like that's the thing is like, how many retail users are going to be comfortable spending $20, $30 for a transaction? You know what I mean? And that's the thing to me that like my realization point happened September 2021 when I got into Solana. Because I was like, dude, retail's never going to be comfortable paying $100 to send $5. Like that's insane. You know what I mean? So for me, it's like even if the chain is down for a day, that's still faster than a wire transfer.
So could you argue though that this is just delaying the inevitable? Like the blockchain trilemma is still there. Eventually Solana will have to go to L2s. Do you think that this is just kind of, I mean, maybe not even like the next decade or two, but do you think there's an argument there to say that ETH maybe still has the best, it's accepted that things can't happen on the L1, maybe much earlier in its lifetime, but this is always going to be a problem for Solana. And also I've also seen that there are now some like SVM style, I think, is it Monad, the one that's going to be built on ETH, which is like using the same technology as an L2? Do you not see that as a worry?
I don't think it's too much of a worry because now you're still talking L2s and we're even getting into L3s, which is crazy to me. You know what I mean? Like we're just kicking the can down the road with these L2s, L3s, what'll inevitably be L4s and L5s, which to me is just nuts. You know what I mean? Monad's interesting. It's an L2 using SVM, which is the same tech stack that Sol's on, but you kind of just brought it up yourself in that comment. Why would you not just use an L1? And that's what Solana is. And we circled on this a little bit earlier with FireDancer, dual client support and a million transactions potential capabilities. What's going to stop it from being able to scale is really tough to say. And now it's going to get to a point where it's like, this is a trial and error phase of seeing what actually works and what doesn't. And that's kind of what I'm most excited for. Is we're still, I mean, dude, the NFT side of things is 2 years old. Blockchain use case stuff is 5, 6, 7. You know what I mean? And we haven't really seen much adoption from it globally. I even look at things like AVAX subnets, which I'm extremely bullish on, because that becomes really interesting to me. Like places like South Korea use an AVAX subnet called HK Planet that a lot of people sleep on and don't really realize that that's actually happening in real time. And to me, that's way more of an interesting conversation point than going and finding L3s and trying to fix these use cases that we're starting to already see be resolved on some of these L1s. So I think
why is a subnet better than an L3?
I think the more or less they could be viewed as the same for sure. But the subnet being that it's its own chain with its own gas is interesting. Whereas an L3 is still a parent company of that chain that has to require things to build on top of it. Like I look at a lot of the gaming side, which is really interesting for subnets, like really interesting, where there's more control of the parent entity that's using that subnet and launching it versus an L2, which is still a parent blockchain that now you still have to interact with and interface with. Lack of control is really the big thing.
Yeah, look, I think there's going to be, this is the cycle where a lot of that is going to be fought, right? This like monolithic versus subnets versus versus rollups, like which is going to be the best. I know like Cosmos has its whole ecosystem as well, like different chains, and people are saying some of those are undervalued if Solana starts to move and things like AVAX start to move. I think even yesterday you saw people starting to talk about Cosmos again. It's going to be interesting to see how that develops. We kind of just went and touched on it as well. NFTs, I know you're big into NFTs. You obviously host The Daily Show. I know we only have you for a little bit longer, but what are you most interested in on the NFT side? I know there's not as much historical stuff on Solana, so it's mainly utility players, but like, what, I know you obviously you have your own NFT project as well, so you're going to talk about that, but like, what else do you think is interesting?
I mean, obviously, I gotta give the Bodogos plug. Have to. Yeah. Shout out to Dogs.
I got some merch, apparently.
I know, yeah. Did you get the box?
I wasn't in Miami when it got handed, so I think OSF's got it.
Okay, sweet. So even better. Yeah, yeah. So you got to get a hold of that. It's a nice little care package as well. But yeah, to me, it's like, it's fascinating because we actually had Ice Bags on yesterday and he was publicly saying he likes Solana because the top projects have these like business use cases outside of it. You look at something like Tensorians, which is Tensor's NFT project. You look at something like Mad Lads, which has an exchange in Dubai, the only one with the license that they have. You look at something like Clanosaurs, which is the IP play. And a lot of these things, it's like, I think part of that is because we've seen these same cycles already and Sol just moves quicker, just plain and simple. And it's what I've always said is like, it trades faster, NFT collections move quicker. It's way more violent swings on both sides versus ETH NFTs. When it comes to like what I'm looking at, I actually bought back in the parcels yesterday at six because I was like, dude, these things sold off way too hard. I look at something like the Clanosaur side of things. I look at, there's a couple other plays too, like Cups, which is a coffee company, which has just been dominating IRL events. And those are sitting at like a three Sol floor, but their revenue generation is great. Like they're just absolutely crushing it. So it's awesome to see these brands and organizations use it more as like a loyalty program.
Yeah, it's strange that it's a lot of this, like they have a business or they have something like a exchange or, and this is just their NFT of that. Whereas on ETH, it was kind of done the other way around. Like you sold the cartoon JPEG and then you worked out the business on the back end. Like, yep. On Sol, it's like you have this whole business and then the NFT just becomes like a utility pass to that.
Yeah. And that's kind of how I look at it, is like, it's kind of nice because we have this situation where it's like, I've always thought of NFTs as a way, I always compare it, like when people ask, I'm like, imagine if you could just buy Delta's diamond and you could buy it instead of having to do all the flights. You could just purchase it. And that's kind of how I look at a lot of NFTs, is like, I can just get top tier loyalty for some of these products and platforms simply by either participating, minting it early on, or spending capital and just immediately jumping the line. And I think that's what makes a lot of sense, because that information and data that you can actually use from a business perspective is really interesting to me. And that's kind of where I look at a lot of NFTs, is like, someone asked me the other day, they're like, do you think 10K PFPs will be the future? I'm like, absolutely not. Like, I think if anything, open editions, hundreds of thousands of supply, and more of that royalty or loyalty and rewards program is where I see like the future of the JPEGs kind of going.
So, as an owner of a PFP dog project, what is the future of that? Like, maybe we'll get, I
yeah,
know you
no, great question.
Another 5 minutes or so, but yeah, where do you see yourself?
Yes. I mean, I look at it a lot as like, this is the easiest path forward to reward the community. And some of it got leaked on the timeline from the merchandise side of things. And that's kind of where they should be excited to see. We have a point system called Bones, just knowing how long people have been backing it, staking it, and having it just sit in the wallet, accruing these. And it's all rewarding those users, those frequent listeners, those active community members and participants, and giving back to them in some fun and innovative ways. It's also like, we are a media company. So like, how do we partner with other places and organizations and help use their platforms to reward our community? Because we're bringing them into our community and showcasing their product and platform to our audience. So a lot of that is, how do we identify those key audience members? Well, it's the holders. And then how do we actually continue to amplify their voices through content? We shout out a variety of them daily. We amplify them on the timeline through a bunch of different social metrics and means. And then it's also like, how do we continue to get the IP of the dogs everywhere that people can see it? So they're wondering what it is and how they can get involved. So it's kind of a cumulative approach of like, let's reward the community. Let's work with our partners to reward the community. And then let's do what we can to reward those longtime listeners, viewers, and community members.
Yeah, let's do a little Rec Radio Bodogos partnership, maybe reward 100%. Our listeners.
100%.
Now, I know we only got you probably for another minute or so, or a few minutes, but that's our show is mainly around risk takers, traders. Maybe let's talk about what it was like during the depths of the Solana dip. And then we'll go to kind of our final question, which is how not to get wrecked. But yeah, like, what was it like then? How did you cope as a trader? Because I know you were kind of all in throughout that whole period.
So 16 to 18 was my first cycle. I ran about 15 grand to a little over 600K and lost all of it. Like literally every last penny. I think I had like $30 to my name at one point. Just blew the entire bag. So this cycle, I was taking a lot of profits off the table, recognizing profits and doing what I could. And when it came to Sol, I saw it at $8. I saw it at $9, $10, $12, et cetera. And I just thought to myself, I was like, okay, in this moment, the timeline's still active, excited, and aggressive. If this goes to zero, you'll just go broke again. You know, like you've done it once before, you'll bounce back and figure it out. Or this is the trade that retires you. It was kind of my mentality. I was like, I've had conviction in this thing for 2 years. I had conviction at $260. How could I not have conviction at $12? So to me, that was like, I'm going to back this. I'm going to keep doubling down on this. The tech's only gotten better. Downtime's non-existent. Even with this, like when FTX collapsed, Solana didn't go offline, which was like to many people shocking. You know what I mean? So that was a big thing for me was like, okay, so clearly this thing's improving. You saw Raj and Tolly just basically be like, we're going to keep working. This is life. It doesn't matter. And to me, seeing the conviction in them was what also gave me conviction to be like, you don't need an SBF or an FTX to just constantly prop the bag up. You can have conviction on a lot of things here where it's like, if I back this and understand the tech as well as I think I do, then this is my make it trade. And that was kind of the thesis I had despite the lows where even as the price went down, I just kept buying more. And I was like, either this turns around or it's going to go to zero and we'll just keep working, you know?
Is it still the make it trade? Do you still think people could get in here and look at like
100%, 100%, 100%. It's, I think, I don't know about 100X. That's the thing for me. I mean, what are we at right now? 70? A 10X seems feasible. Peak bull run, 700. Absolutely. I don't think it flips ETH, but I like Ansem's takes a lot where he says it's going to be 0.1.
Of course you do.
Yeah, of course. I know. So when I started seeing him bull post, I was like, oh, it's fucking time.
What was the high price target from Van Eck? I think they came out with something wild, right?
$3,000.
Yeah.
$3,000. Yeah. I'm like, all right, that's a little bit crazy, dude. That's a little bit wild. Like, even I'm not that bull. I'm not that bullish.
So that's a 400X.
Yeah, roughly. 400.
Yeah, that's nice. That would be nice. Yeah,
I wouldn't be mad about it one bit. But I think that's also like contingent on Bitcoin and ETH. And like my targets are 100K Bitcoin, 10K ETH, which would be in theory $1,000 Solana, you know? So like from here, that's not too shabby either. Like that's 15X.
Yeah, that would be wild. All right. Well, look, Easy, it's been great having you on. Maybe we'll just end with our final question, which is how would you tell our listeners not to get wrecked? We are Wrecked Radio. So what was your advice to not get wrecked?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple quick hitters and like the rules that I've been navigating this current uptrend with is have a conviction. First and foremost, do your own research. If you see someone talk about something on the timeline, take 5 to 10 minutes to go research it yourself, build your own thesis. But then a couple key things would be have an exit target, have a stop loss target. And if either hit, don't even think twice about it. Recognize both of them and keep it moving because bankroll management is the bigger aspect of all of this. And if you take something down 90%, now you need a 200% gain just to get back to break even. You know what I mean? So to me, that's where I look at it. I'm like, bankroll management's crucial. Stop losses are big. Have set price targets and don't differ from your own plan, but understand your own conviction. Take the time to do your own research. That's like where I've had conviction and that's what's paid off for me more than anything else.
Do you have a price target for Sullivan in your head?
Feeling out. I've already said it a couple times. I'm going to take a tiny portion off at 260 to recoup costs. Yeah, so a small portion. I mean, my Solana bags are just kind of gross at this point. I always say I'm overexposed, but I want to be uncomfortably exposed. Yeah. So I'm still buying right now. I've said it a bunch on our content. I DCA every single day until we hit $100, and then I'm only going to DCA red days. And then at 260, recognize the initial bag and let the rest just ride.
All right, I love the conviction. We will come back to you when we hit 260. You and Raul Paul have really, really sold us. I mean, he came on and told us at 30. You now come on and told us at 67 or wherever it is. Let's see in a year's time where we are. It would be great. if it'd be great if you were right.
Oh, fingers crossed, my friend. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Sorry, I have to jump here as well. Have a sick.
No worries. We're gonna do some extended aerobics.
Easy. I know the dog's sick, and that's why you have to leave.
Oh, dude. Stressful as hell. It's been 3 days of just absolute hell. Yeah,
this is a great show for me. I felt like OSF. I just sat here and did nothing.
You did literally say before the show, "I'm not gonna say a word this show because I'm so hungover." So.
Whoa, dude! I said not to expose that. I said. We're gonna do a bunch of dual arena stuff, and Mando's gonna give away a bunch of money. But a lot easies. Let's get into the dual arena, I guess. Yeah. Let's see what's cooking.